Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to day one of the French Open 2023 live from Tennis Podcast Towers, Paris. And I say live because day one of Roland Garros is still, as we come to you, underway. We have Jessica Pegula, who is on the cusp of victory over Danielle Collins on court Suzanne Longlen. Court Suzanne Longlen, David, that I'm sure will come up a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Over the course of this episode, we've just watched Luca Puy, a complete victory over the man that he also beat in the final round of qualifying, because he ended up getting in as a lucky loser. So, Matt, the incredibly emotional Luca Puy story that you told us about a couple of days ago continues, and I feel like it's going to be big at Roland Garros.
Yes.
Or maybe already is big at Roland Garros.
I think it's probably the biggest story so far. I think slams are always elevated when home players are doing well, and nobody saw this coming for Luca Puy, and I think everyone is just so pleased for him. He beat Yuri Rodionov again much more straightforwardly than he did in qualifying. He nearly lost in qualifying, but there was just no chance of that happening today. He won very convincingly, and special scenes on court 14 at the end. There was a big rendition of the Marseillaise afterwards, which is, you know, the French Open started when the Marseillaise is being broken out. I would love to join in with one of those these 2 weeks. I do love the Marseillaise.
It was all so quintessentially early days of Roland Garros, wasn't it? Sort of a day session match overspilling into the evening, sun sort of dipping down over Roland Garros. It's an outside court, but still one with a good amount of space in the stands, every inch of which is filled with just tennis fans going absolutely bananas for an incredible story. I mean, I didn't know everything that Matt had told us about Luca Puy until he told us a couple of days ago. Now I am all in on Luca Puy, and you can, maybe I'm editorializing too far here, but you can see it on his face, can't you, what he's been through. He looks like he's been at sea for a few years.
That's well put, and I think because you can compare it to the man that we remember beating Rafael Nadal at the US Open in 5 sets at the US Open and leading the French Davis Cup team. And honestly, had you told me that he was going to be a man that Matt would tell us had suffered with depression and alcoholism, I really wouldn't have expected that just from the little that I knew about him and the kind of the vibe that he gave off to me. And I think that just goes to show how you can never know. You don't know what's going on behind somebody's eyes and in their life and in behind the closed doors. And he'd clearly been suffering. And I always used to think he was just somebody who was just very loose and found the sport very easy and maybe struggled to commit because of that. And I realized that I got that wrong. And he is someone, watching that TV picture tonight, I felt very connected to what I was witnessing and wanting it for him. I don't mean wish bad on his opponent who he's beaten twice, but you know, the whole it was quintessentially Roland Garros. I mean, that everybody buys in. Everybody knows what this tournament is who comes, and they're all on board. There's not one person that's rolling their eyes at those situations. They're all into it, and I was really happy for him.
Ranked 676 in the world is Luca Puy. And my suggestion today for a Matt Stat was, I bet nobody's ever won a main draw Grand Slam match or French Open match ranked that low. And Matt said, that data is so not readily available, it'll take you ages to research. And I thought, I'll prove him wrong. I'm going to set out down this road and show what a great research assistant I can be. And Matt sort of kept gently saying, I really wouldn't bother. It's too much work. And then after about 25 minutes of me sort of narrating my toils at the laptop, Matt goes, I think I'll just email the ATP and they'll be able to tell us.
I think you'd got to 2019 and we were hoping to go back to 1968. It was going to be a long day.
One of us has got experience of stats on this sofa.
I thought it was my opportunity to prove myself.
I would like to make two points that A, I was grateful for the help, and B, I don't always take shortcuts and cut corners with my stat. I do like doing the research, but there were just certain parameters.
It was going to take all day.
It was. Anyway, I've emailed Greg Sharko at the ATP and he's come up with the answer. So we do know the answer. Luca Puy is the lowest ranked man to win a round one match at Roland Garros in 10 years. So actually, you weren't that far away from potentially
I could have made it to 2013.
You could have contacted Greg Sharker and said, hey, Greg, guess what? Guess what I've found? You don't even need to go and dig it up. Greg, what a legend he is, by the way.
And that was Pablo Cuevas was number 762. When he beat Adrian Mannarino, who we've...
just watched lose.
I mean, to be fair, we didn't really watch it,
did we? No, we just became aware that he had lost.
We're aware that it happened.
Yeah, he lost to Hugo Humbert in the final match of the day on Châtrier. This episode of The Tennis Podcast and all episodes of The Tennis Podcast throughout Roland Garros is brought to you in association with On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider. On Location can arrange the most fantastic tickets and hospitality experiences via Steve Fogel's international tennis stores to all of the four Grand Slam tournaments. That includes the US Open, and you have just 3 days left to use your 5% discount on a ticket and hospitality package at Flushing Meadows in New York, as well as the best tickets. You can get access to all-inclusive food and drinks in a lounge and a rooftop bar in between matches. To use your 5% discount code, just go to toursfortennis.com/podcast, click the US Open discount section and enter the code FINALSLAM. You have until May the 31st at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time to use your discount. So the race is on. You have just 3 more days. And check out our show notes for the fine print. Now, it's interesting, isn't it? The evolution of the Sunday start at Roland Garros, because it used to be a very damp squib of a start, didn't it? It used to be kind of, we're introducing these Sunday starts, but slightly apologetically. It was like, don't worry, the names you've heard of will play on Monday. It'll feel like it's starting on Monday. We'll just do a little bit on Sunday. And over the years, they've kind of bigged up the Sunday more and more. I still don't think it feels like a proper full throttle start. Like, none of us were expecting to see Świątek or Alcaraz or Djokovic on the schedule today. But bigger names than there have been in the past, I think, given everything I've said there. Aryna Sabalenka, probably the biggest name that we saw. And she got the dreaded Ons Jabeur slot opening up Châtrier today. And tennis-wise, there's a lot more besides the tennis to talk about here. But just to cover off the tennis, first of all, because on paper this looked like a tricky draw against Marta Kostyuk, and especially given the slot she was placed in and what happened to Ons Jabeur and everything last year, I thought Sabalenka did fantastically in this match. She was a breakdown, wasn't she, in the opening set, and then surged and was pretty brilliant from that point onwards.
And that's been a real pattern of hers this year. I feel like she's been most vulnerable in a lot of matches early on, certainly going back to the Australian Open. That was the pattern of so many of her matches. And yeah, she did go break down, a couple of double faults in that game. I had just picked her to reach the final in our predictions, and that was a weather forecast based pick, because hot, sunny, fast conditions that we're expecting certainly over the next week, hopefully over the next 2 weeks, I feel like should really suit Aryna Sabalenka. You know, she gets enough time on the clay to hit her shots, and if it's hot and sunny, they're going to go through the court. And that is exactly what happened once she got that break back. I thought she was absolutely awesome for the rest of the match, creating all sorts of angles off return, just hitting through the ball so powerfully, so confidently, all the things we have come to expect from Aryna Sabalenka. And a very impressive performance in a round one match that was, you know, tricky because of the fact that Marta Kostyuk's a very good player. And also, as Sabalenka said herself, emotionally quite tricky going up against a Ukrainian and knowing that there'd be so much increased attention on it, I suppose.
Yeah, and there was something that we were expecting, which was no handshake between the players. They'd played before, hadn't they, since the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, supported, of course, by Belarus. They have played since then. Kostyuk didn't shake hands with Sabalenka then, and she hasn't, as a rule, been shaking hands with any Russian or Belarusian player. So we knew that wasn't going to happen. Sabalenka knew that wasn't going to happen. But it seems like the crowd maybe didn't know that was going to happen. And there was a moment of great discomfort and confusion where the crowd booed Marta Kostyuk for failing to shake hands with Aryna Sabalenka. Sabalenka became confused and thought that they were booing her, and the whole situation had to be cleared up in the on-court interview.
Yeah, so Sabalenka's initial reaction, as you said, was that they were booing her. Kostyuk had obviously sort of left the court, so we didn't really see her reaction in real time. But Sabalenka did a sort of bow to the crowd after she thought she'd been booed, and then sort of, I think, the wheels turned and she realised that they weren't booing her, so she then thanked them. And then in the on-court interview, she said, sorry, thank you for the support. And then, of course, it all came up in the press conferences.
Yeah, so on those press conferences, that was where I don't want to call it drama because, you know, it's all so serious, and that makes it sound like a soap opera. But there were some quite dramatic words that ended up unfolding in these press conferences. Sabalenka was in first. Matt, you were in both of these press conferences, so I'll ask you for a bit of colour. But I'll just to make sure I get their words right, I'll read you out some of the main quotes that come out. Sabalenka, she said, about the war situation, I said it many, many times, nobody in this world, Russian athletes or Belarusian athletes, support the war. Nobody. How can we support the war? Nobody, normal people, will never support it. Why we have to go loud and say those things? This is like 1 + 1, it's 2. Of course we don't support war. If it could affect anyhow the war, if it could stop it, we would do it. But unfortunately, it's not in our hands. That's the part about Ukrainians. Now, those quotes were put to Marta Kostyuk in her very, very moving press conference. She followed Sabalenka, not into the same room. She went into a slightly smaller room. And Kostyuk had this to say. She said, I feel like you should ask these players who they would want to win the war. Because if you ask this question, I'm not so sure these people will say that they want Ukraine to win. She said, this is something life-changing, I think, in the world of people, because this is the biggest difference there is. Because if you ask me who would I want to win the war, I would say Ukraine, of course. I don't know how it will be over, but I want Ukraine to win at the end. But about them, she's talking about players like Sabalenka, I'm not sure. She should talk for herself, I think, first of all, then talk about all the other athletes, because I know I personally know athletes from tennis that support the war. And then she goes on to say, someone like Irina, who is traveling the world, who has a big platform of people who support her. She says, I speak out about these things and I see like the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, the BBC. There are so many platforms that millions, billions of people in the world read. And just to reject her responsibility of having an opinion on the most important things in the world, I cannot respect it. She said that I hate her. I never said publicly nor privately nor to anyone that I hate Aryna Sabalenka or any of the players. I just don't respect her because of her position in this situation. Matt, you were in there. What was that like?
The Sabalenka press conference was extremely tense. It was a very long question that was put to Sabalenka that prompted that response that you read out there. And the journalist asking it was quite emotional while asking it. And I think that prompted quite an emotional sort of tone to Sabalenka's voice as well. And there's always that thing that you can feel in a press conference where you suddenly realise, okay, this is the story. And everyone is suddenly a little bit on edge and everyone falls quiet, everyone pays attention. It's someone who might have been on their phone at the back of the room is suddenly locked in. And it was just extremely tense, I would say. Kostyuk, on the other hand, my main thing was just how extraordinary it was that a 20-year-old was, A, having to talk about topics like this, and B, doing so with such thought, actually, and insight. I really felt like the distinction that she made between saying she doesn't hate Aryna Sabalenka, she just doesn't respect her, was quite an interesting take. She was keen to say that sort of hate is an emotion, it's an emotional reaction, whereas she just thinks that Sabalenka is rejecting her responsibility, her position, and so she's judging her on that action, which is why she doesn't respect her. She spoke again about her personal circumstances in and how her family is now spread out all over the world and how hard it is for her to go home. And she made the point that she thanked Wimbledon for the way that they're offering accommodation for Ukrainian players. And she felt that generally the reaction to Ukrainian players last year at Wimbledon was really supportive. And she expects that to be the case again this year, whereas she quite rightly said that the players who, the people who booed her in the stand, she said they should be embarrassed, and they would look back on surely in a few years' time and wonder why on earth they did that. Sabalenka herself said that she thought it was not right that Kostyuk was booed. And I think that was probably the strongest statement I've ever heard from Aryna Sabalenka in terms of what her position is on the war. But then I do also take Kostyuk's point that there's a distinction to be made and perhaps a further question to be asked about who she would want to win the war. But I don't know. I don't feel like I'm the authority on what is and isn't a legitimate question. And I do think it is difficult for these Russian and Belarusian players. I mean, Kostyuk made the point that she doesn't see how it's difficult for them. And of course, relatively to the Ukrainian players, it isn't. They're not experiencing anything like that. But I can also understand why they're sometimes a little cautious. And I don't think Sabalenka was cautious today. I think she made her position pretty clear.
Gosh, it's all so fantastically difficult and muddy, isn't it? And hopefully it goes without saying that, it's not an equivalent. We know everything is just unthinkably terrible for Ukrainian players and their families and their situations, and perhaps we should be talking about it more, shedding more light on the particularities of those situations. Kostyuk talking today about how she doesn't have a training base. We all remarked, didn't we, after the Wimbledon press conference, how fantastic it is that Wimbledon, that was the biggest takeaway from me of that press conference that Wimbledon, not just for the tournament, but throughout the grass court season, are going to pay for the accommodation and expenses of all Ukrainian players and two team members? I think it was.
I think so.
Throughout the duration of the grass court season, in recognition of the fact that players don't have anywhere to go. They've lost their homes. You've got players entering ITF events just so they've got somewhere to be for a week.
Yeah, and that's, I share Matt's thoughts about feeling a little unqualified. Not so much about asking the question in my case, because I think that I'm comfortable maybe asking the question, and I think Marta Kostyuk makes a good point. It's a difficult question to ask, and maybe it is unfair on one level, but I think it is also valid. It's where I feel unqualified is to judge their responses. I can't put myself in the position of Marta Kostyuk. I can't put myself in the position of Aryna Sabalenka either, and they're both different positions. Certainly it is more difficult for the Ukrainian players, no question, but it is also a pretty difficult situation for those Russian and Belarusian players, and I kind of think Sabalenka's doing what she can do, really. But it must be so hard to hear it if you are one of those Ukrainian players, and I really do understand that. So I'm not going to sit here and tell them what they shouldn't say.
It was an interesting moment in the press room, wasn't it? That it was like sort of first day, as I said, you know, no Świątek, no Djokovic. Everyone's thinking, what's the story going to be? And, you know, a ripple went around the place. It was, okay, we've got our story for the day. That was it, you know. And suddenly you hear the banging of fingers on keyboards, yeah. And the place is alight, isn't it? Sticking with the women's draw then for a bit, we had an upset, or did we? We lost the eighth seed in Maria Sakkari. But we all thought we were going to lose the eighth seed, Maria Sakkari, when we saw the draw.
Who did you actually think was the favourite in that match, out of interest? I mean, before it took place.
Well, I wanted Mukova in my predictions, but she had already gone by the time it was my turn. And I don't think, give me credit if you'd like to, but I'm not saying that to get credit. I think Sakkari's vulnerable in these matches because of all the things we've ever said about Maria Sakkari, particularly recently, and you know what a believer I am in Karolina Mukova. She is such a good tennis player.
Why is she good?
So
why do you like her?
She makes tennis look so easy, and it's such a contrast to Maria Sakkari, who I really like Maria Sakkari, and I have completely different positive emotions watching her, right? You know, it's so effortful, and I'm so thinking about all the work she's done in the gym to achieve everything that she is, and I marvel at that, and it's amazing, but it is so effortful. And by contrast, you've got this smoothness of Karolina Mukova, and sometimes the sort of very typical Czech demeanor on court, of sort of, you know, still waters, that placid demeanor, sometimes I find it difficult to engage with, difficult to get my teeth into, but it doesn't bother me somehow with Karolina Mukova, because it's all just part of the just the laconic smoothness of her, and it's lovely. You went out to watch some of this, Matt.
I did. I went out to watch most of the second set, and if you'll indulge a Fulham analogy to describe the difference between Maria Sakkari and Karolina Mukova. Well, Fulham Man United was just starting as I was out there, and I was having dual thoughts, tennis and football, and suddenly it came to me that down Fulham's left-hand side, we have a left-back called Anthony Robinson, who is an incredible athlete, but sometimes he struggles to do quite basic things like put in a good cross or control the ball.
Or pass to a teammate.
You know, the ball. Yeah. He doesn't have the soft touch, but he's got a lot of incredible qualities. He runs up and down the pitch all day. He's an incredibly useful asset to the team. And just ahead of him on the left-hand side is Willian, who has the silkiest touch and the lightest movement around the pitch. And I often say to my dad, who I go to football with, Anthony Robinson must look at Willian and think, how do you do that? How do you control a football like that? We are both playing the same sport, but we're playing it in such different ways. And that was the same thought I had about Karolina Muchova and Maria Sakkari. There are lots of things that Maria Sakkari can do that Karolina Muchova can't. And one of them, perhaps the most important of all, is stay fit. And yeah. I think anyone predicting Karolina Muchova to do well, as I have this tournament, I think you have, Catherine, as well, we are essentially predicting good health for Karolina Muchova, because we trust the tennis. It's so good when she plays well. And, you know, Sakkari was right there with her. There wasn't much between them.
It was a great match.
It was a really good match. But just when it got tight, I trusted Muchova to be able to deliver on her talent and trust her game more than I trust Sakkari, who gets a bit tight. And in that final game, Sakkari had already done well, brilliantly saving match points, as she so often does when she was behind. She sort of found her best tennis. But eventually she just had a volley on top of the net, Sakkari, which she just dumped in the bottom of the net. And it was just the difference between them. I feel like Muchova wouldn't have done that with her sort of hand skills and soft touch up at the net. But Sakkari just couldn't quite get it over the net. And it ended up being the, I think, penultimate point. And Muchova won it. Honestly, I think Muchova went into that match with a 2-0 head-to-head lead already. I was pretty confident that Muchova would win that, just matchup-wise.
Mm. Same, and she did. Well done, us.
Mm.
I don't feel quite so confident about the fact that I've got her going deep in the tournament, but would love to see it. Somebody wrap Karolina Muchova up in cotton wool for the next 3 days until she plays her next round. No other major notable results, I don't think, on the women's side of things today. Pegula wrapped up victory against Danielle Collins fairly straightforwardly just now, 2 straight sets. As we discussed in our draw preview show, Pegula she delivers, doesn't she? She doesn't let you down. She might hit a ceiling, but she does deliver. And Collins has been having a tough time recently. Kazatkina is currently a setup on Yulia Niemeyer, future Wimbledon champion, according to Hannah, who's back in charge of our Twitter. So if you don't follow us on Twitter, then rectify that, because Hannah is a treat.
You can see how one throwaway comment can stay with you for the rest of your life. She said that about Yulia Niemeyer, what, year and a half ago?
It's very Andy Murray saying Caroline Garcia is going to be world number one, isn't
exactly,
it? Yeah, that stayed with her for, gosh, 12 years? I think it might be. It's over 10 years now.
Remember when I was going to watch every Maxime Cressy match?
Well,
I don't do that.
You've got a new French.
You've got a
well,
new...
Well, he's American, isn't
well,
he?
Well, actually, David, you've got a few new Frenchies.
I have, yeah.
David is... Well, you're in the right place, David.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you'll be big into Americans in a few months' time.
Quite possible.
But right now, you're all about the French.
Oh. Well, it started in Lyon. And my good friend, who doesn't know who I am, Artefis, who won the title aged 18 and did what I said he'd do, with a bit of help from a retirement and a walkover and a disqualification.
In underwhelming ATP stats news, David, that he's the youngest ATP title winner this year.
Okay, well, that's young enough for me. And he also won me 210 points in the newsletter prediction. So sign up to the newsletter if you want to find out who else I'm going for. And we actually went in his press conference today, didn't we, Catherine, when he arrived?
We did, a first meeting for us with Artefis. It was just us and Matt Futterman of the New York Times in terms of English.
Great gang.
It was. It was very much the indie kids that had heard about a new band, and we're going to see them at the local dive bar. Except it wasn't a local dive bar, because it was actually press conference room 2, and it was a packed house.
Yeah.
He that could have been the main press conference room, and you'd have thought it was one of the big names in there.
First time I've ever been called an indie kid, so I'm quite chuffed. But yeah, he was sweet, wasn't he? 18 years of age, all brand new to him, and he handled himself really well, certainly in English, the part I could understand anyway.
He's got the sweetness and swagger combo,
yeah,
which is the dream. He was sweet. He was delightful, really looked you in the eye, was great at eye contact, which, you know, 18-year-old boys generally aren't, let alone when they're in a room full of strangers being grilled. But
he had one of those things that I love about tennis players of this type. He was curious and amused at us all being there.
There was a glint in his eye.
He wasn't dismissive of the process. He was genuinely quite interested in it, I think. That may change. But, I mean, in terms of his performance, we talked about it a little bit the other day, but this wasn't spectacular. This was just authoritative, and he showed he has got something. And I'm going to be following his progress very closely. I suspect he won't get beyond the first round here because of Alejandro Davidovich-Fokina and best of five sets, but long term, this guy has got the goods. So that's my initial French player of interest. And then my second one was first up on Susan Longlen, and it was like all my wishes came true on the opening day, because I got back out on Longlen, which is my favourite court. Media seats are still there, even though they've renovated. They still let us have those amazing seats. It became loud because they'd got a French player in Constant Lestienne playing up against Karen Khachanov. And Lestienne, if you've never seen him play, there's nobody else like him on the tour, I don't think. We affectionately call him a wind-up merchant because he is just making fun of the game of tennis. When I saw him play Cameron Norrie, I think, in Australia earlier this year, I mean, he was more extreme than today. It was almost as though there wasn't a strategy other than to just annoy Cameron Norrie. That was the strategy, with off-pace shots. And when they're just not required, where you've got a simple put-away, instead he plays a slice forehand or a drop shot or a lob. But he's a gifted guy. And he's just, from what you were both telling me, he's had a pretty terrible time with injury, and he's been retiring from countless matches recently. But he went up against Khachanov and absolutely took him apart for two sets. He made him look so cumbersome and ordinary for two sets for 6-3, 6-1. And the crowd, there's nothing like a French crowd going for a French player like that. I mean, I've been watching this tournament for 25 years, and I just didn't understand until I was in the stadium myself. So if you ever get the chance, get there.
I'm so pleased that you've been able to experience it yet again on day one, match one. It was such a revelation for you last year, wasn't it? And it's just fantastic that it's happened again. I mean, I was completely stunned by this scoreline after two sets. I mean, David hinted at it there. Lestienne had lost 8 matches in a row coming into Roland Garros. 3 of those he'd retired in. I assumed he just wasn't fit, to be honest.
Well, we talked David out of a Lestienne prediction, didn't we? We said, David, he's not fit.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, Khachanov, you know, who I think we all find to be perhaps slightly frustrating as a tennis player, someone who seems to have so much at his disposal and yet is quite one-dimensional as a player, but he has been very reliable in Grand Slams recently. I mean, and certainly at the French Open, he's never lost in the first round. So when he's, what was it, 6-3, 6-1, the first two sets? And the look on his face, he was just having a horrible time, wasn't he? He was being made to look really ordinary by a guy who was just having his own way on the court. And I didn't watch this match as closely as you. I don't quite know how it turned round. Every time I looked over, Lestienne seemed to be having a chat with a trainer or a doctor, and perhaps those initial thoughts we had were actually
even when
true.
He wasn't getting treatment, he was just having a chit chat with a medical professional. We were in the stands for a lot of it, so we couldn't hear what was being said, but he had a lot of leg rubs and the compression socks that he played the first 3 sets of the match in, he didn't play the last 2 sets of the match in. So whether it was cramp, right. I don't know. Certainly he lost, because of the nature of his game, there was about two-thirds of a set where he was serving at sort of half, two-thirds pace. But I just thought it was a tactic. I just thought it was him being a troll, you know, mixing things up. And then he started having these chats with the trainer, and I thought, oh, maybe there's something a bit wrong here.
He's like, almost like a snooker player who's thinking three, four shots ahead because he's playing combinations. He's not trying to hit you off the court, even though he does have real power because of his timing. One time he hit a moon ball on defense and used it as an approach shot to get into the net, and then hit two volleys away for a winner. He was throwing drop shots in, and then he drilled Khachanov at a forehand into his back, you know, when he got him in at the net. And actually, look, you know, you may be thinking, hold on, didn't Khachanov win? Why are you all banging on about this guy? And this is the effect he had on us. Yes, Khachanov did win, and I gotta say, all credit to him, because a lot of people would have just not been able to handle that. And he dug in, and he played professionally, and he came back and won in five sets. And he gave a really nice interview to Marion Bartoli on court afterwards, trying to kind of win over the crowd a little bit back and being honest and saying, listen, it's not easy playing him and all of you. and is there any chance I can just have one cheer from you guys? Hmm. And they gave him a big ovation. So it was well handled by him.
Yeah, I think he should be on your men's backhand list, watch list.
This is the sub list.
Lestienne.
Yeah.
It's a beauty.
It's a belter.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. Lovely timing.
And while we're on that subject, Matt, of lovely backhands, the first live tennis that you watched at this French Open, I thought was a slightly left field choice, but you can't resist a fifth set.
It was a very left field choice for me, to be honest. I will say that David Goffin versus Hubert Hurkacz did not pop off the order of play for me. But you're right, I can't resist a deciding set. A deciding set takes precedence over any sort of preference I may have for a player, and I will basically watch a deciding set between any two players. I just think it's, you know, it's the sweet spot of tennis, isn't it? Everything on the line. Not that I don't like David Goffin and Hubert Hurkacz as people. There's just,
sure, we hear you.
Yeah.
I
don't need to keep talking, do I?
I'm going to bail you out here and say what I was getting at in the segue there was what a lovely backhand David Goffin has.
Yeah, and actually I do like watching David Goffin, and in his pomp.
So really it's just you, but you were talking about.
Yes, correct. So I went over and saw Hubert Hurkacz win a fifth set. That's what happened.
So while David was having an out-of-body experience on Longlen watching Constant Lestienne, you were watching a slightly pedestrian fifth set won by Hubert Hurkacz.
Yeah, I mean, there was one funny moment which sort of typified their personalities, really, because I think most people would say they're probably two of the nicest people on the ATP Tour, Hurkacz and Goffin. That's probably why the match didn't pop off the page for me. I knew there wasn't going to be any aggro, but there was quite a nice moment where Hurkacz hit what I can only describe as a god-awful drop shot. He was already up by the net and didn't even manage to reach the net with his drop shot, but I think it was so bad that it sort of flummoxed Goffin, and he, for some reason, ran towards it, even though it was clear it was never going over the net, and tripped. And it looked like he'd rolled his ankle for a moment, and Hurkacz took it upon him to grab the towels off David Goffin's chair and walk round to the other side of the net and help him. It was a sweet moment, but Goffin had real support from the crowd. I think there was some sort of francophone allegiance there. They were really trying to get behind him. But once he went to break down, he just got nowhere near Hurkacz's serve, and Hurkacz survives, even if it wasn't particularly convincing.
Speaking of god-awful drop shots, Jiří Veselý played one on one of his set points against Stefanos Tsitsipas earlier on today. These were 3 points that he had in the fourth set tiebreak to take the match into a fifth set. He had Tsitsipas on the ropes. He had three consecutive set points in what was, I'm going to politely describe as not the most high-quality tiebreak I've ever seen from either player. And look, credit to Tsitsipas. He pulled it out of the bag when he needed to. Absolutely, really dug his heels in. Okay, he got one or two gifts. It was a truly dreadful drop shot that Vesely played, and Tsitsipas just lapped it up. But I think the other two set points Tsitsipas saved fair and square, you know, produced the serve and the forehand when he needed to. And actually on match point, it was a match point on Vesely's serve. He won it with a chip backhand return. And it felt like such a repeatable point. It felt like a real pattern. Chip backhand return. Vesely wasn't able to get too much on it. Got a mid-court ball, smashed away the forehand commandingly. It was beautiful stuff. But look, I didn't see all of this match. It was quite a lengthy one. The second match of the day on Chatrier, I did think that, as we discussed a couple of days ago, I'm worried about Tsitsipas. All is not right with him. And I think Vesely can be dangerous on clay. I saw him beat Djokovic at Monte Carlo a few years ago, and okay, it was a few years ago, but that's still in his muscle memory, you know? And he's a big server, which Tsitsipas doesn't always enjoy. It's less of a problem for him on clay because he has that bit more time on the ball, but he still doesn't love it, I don't think. So it didn't massively take me aback that this was a little bit of a struggle for Tsitsipas, but this match also didn't change any of my feelings about Tsitsipas being in a tough spot potentially this tournament.
Yeah, he doesn't give me a great deal of confidence on his behalf that he's going to be, well, I certainly don't think he's going to be winning this tournament. And I think if he can get to his sort of seeded position, he'll be doing well. So if he can get to play Alcaraz in the quarterfinals, I think he'll have done pretty well, really, given the sort of physical position he looks in. I mean, he did make quite a point in his pre-tournament press conference that a couple of times in the years that he did well here, that he'd had a struggle in the first round. And then he'd found his way and he ended up reaching the final and very nearly beating Novak Djokovic. So, but I kind of think that's what you have to tell yourself and remind yourself when you're one of these players who's just sort of searching for something. And he really is searching for form at the moment. And more than just form, I think, you know, identity as a tennis player and as a person right now.
Yeah, I think he really got away with one today, I would say. Vesely served for the opening set and had multiple set points, as you said, in the fourth set and won the third. I mean, there were opportunities there for Vesely to win three of those four sets, for sure. Tsitsipas was pretty critical of his own performance in press. You know, very, very pleased with, as you said, his sort of fighting spirit. And he didn't, you know, he never sort of checked out of the match or anything. He was always locked in. But he described it as incredibly inconsistent and said that his footwork was lousy and just generally was pretty unimpressed with how he played. And Vesely is dangerous. I used to play a lot of sort of half-court singles at school. If there were too many people to play on two courts, you know, you'd use half a court each. And I feel like Vesely would be an absolute nightmare in half-court singles. If you take away the sort of movement aspect, and I think Tsitsipas, you know, when they got into rallies, Tsitsipas was able to sort of manoeuvre him around. But when it was just straight shot-making and hitting and talent in the hands, Vesely is very underrated, I think. And he's been injured since the US Open, basically. He's sort of on the comeback at the moment. And that was a tricky round one. And yeah, good for Tsitsipas to get through it, but a long way from his best.
Do you know what he is, David? Vesely?
Tricky?
No.
Agricultural?
Agricultural.
Wow. Yeah.
He looks like he could do some farm work.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight.
Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
So that was pretty much the meat of day one of Roland Garros. Tomorrow, Monday, is when I feel like, not to do down today, it was a really good start, and, you know, particularly for David, but it feels like, it still feels like tomorrow is, you know, red carpet gets laid down.
Well, it's like you said, it's always been a slow burn start, but it's felt more of an equal slate of matches this year than ever before. But inevitably, there is a dilution of it. But they have held back the biggest names. So we get to really launch the thing again tomorrow.
Yeah, I've come to quite like the Sunday soft launch of the tournament.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it.
It's just generally a little bit more manageable and digestible. Speaking as someone who gets overwhelmed and stressed.
Actually, that's a good point, actually. Matt was less overwhelmed
Matt
today than he sometimes
today.
Is.
He was his element.
There's still plenty to watch, plenty going on. You can literally pop from one good match to another, but it's just a little bit more relaxing than all the other
I will never forget your first Australian Open when you were just in front of the screens. And I was just trying to work out what's wrong.
It was like a beautiful mind when, you know, the things appear in the air. Mm. It was like that.
What's wrong?
This is all great. Why did I know it's great. That's not the point. It's too great.
Look, David, you might get that tomorrow. This is what is on the order of play for tomorrow, day two of Roland Garros, starting on Châtelet with Pliskova, Karolina Pliskova, that is, against Sloane Stephens, which, in the words of Matt Roberts, is very 2018, isn't it? Pliskova is suddenly somehow the 16th seed.
How has that happened?
Don't know, but there we go.
No.
Second on Châtelet is Novak Djokovic against, and I'm going to have to click through to get the first name here because, full disclosure, don't know this guy, Alexander Kovacevic, and he is American.
Although,
number 93.
Djokovic knows about him because he says he has Serbian ancestry and therefore he seemed quite effusive about the idea of playing him. I dare say he also likes his chances, to be honest. But not that he is always very full in his praise for and respect for opponents. But, I mean, you know, that's not a bad draw.
It's not a bad draw. Caroline Garcia is next up on Châtelet against Wang Zhiyu of China. That's going to be interesting, isn't it? And I know not to ask for Caroline Garcia-related predictions from anyone on the Tennis Podcast, so I'll leave that there.
Just to say, I've just quickly looked up Karolina Pliskova's record. She's reached the quarterfinals of the last two slams. The US Open and the Australian Open.
She's done that quietly.
I had wiped that from my memory.
But We presumably talked about
them. We were at them. How do we not know that?
Who did she play?
At the US Open, she beat Magda Linette, Marie Buzkova, Belinda Bencic, Victoria Azarenka. That's a very good run.
That's a great run.
And then lost to Aryna Sabalenka. And then in Australia,
I feel ashamed.
She beat Shi Yu Wang, Yulia Putintseva, Varvara Krejcova and Zhang Shuai.
Right. Okay.
Okay, I forgive myself for the Australian Open.
Apologies, folks, for not covering those results in more detail.
But details. I don't forgive myself for the US Open.
The first night session match of the French Open 2023. This, remember, is the match deemed the match of the day by the tournament. It's Yannick Sinner against Alexandre Muller, who is French. And I give them, you know, I understand that the Frenchness is part of the algorithm. But that is disappointing.
Yeah, well, I think it was an opportunity for Emily Maresmo and the tournament to make a statement right at the beginning of the tournament and accept and acknowledge, as she accepted and acknowledged at the time last year, having spoken to you for a second time, that, yeah, they needed to probably do a better job of scheduling the matches, both in terms of how many women's matches were put up first on the day before people really get in their seats, and more importantly, having more night session primetime matches involving women, given that they only had one last year. And look, it's only day one. It's only day one of them, so there's plenty of time, and absolutely she should and they should be given chance to show that they are going to treat things differently to last year. But I think that this was an opportunity. If you're not going to have Alcaraz or Djokovic on the night session, which would have been perfectly understandable if they had, then this was your chance to have one of the women's matches and make a statement that we value women equally and we really want to show them.
Yeah, you've got a French player as the fifth seed in the women's.
Mm.
You know, she could very justifiably be in that that night session match. On court, Suzanne Longlen. It starts with Benoit Paire against Cameron Norrie. Belinda Bencic second up. Carlos Alcaraz kicks off on Longlen.
I love that. I mean, unfortunately, I don't think I can go and watch it because I'm going to be commentating. But please, one of you go and see that.
I think we will both.
I can probably stretch
yeah.
that. Yeah.
We'll manage.
Matt, go and watch Carlos Alcaraz. Oh, okay then.
Last up on there, it's Kvitova against Cocchioretto. Mathieu tomorrow is Kayla Day against Kristina Medenovic. Fabio Fognini against Felix Auger-Aliassime. Alina Svitolina plays on Simone Mathieu tomorrow. And Alina Svitolina won the title yesterday in
Strasbourg.
I was going to say Lyon, but of course that's where Artifice won his title. And again, we covered her getting into the final a couple of days ago. Well, she blooming well won that final, and it's brilliant. And that's a tough draw for a Trevisan in the opening round. Trevisan loves to play here, doesn't she?
Svitolina donated all of her prize money to people who've suffered in Ukraine as well. Her compatriots, and that's wonderful.
She's a great story. And then David last on Simone Mathieu tomorrow, Artifice against Alejandro Davidovich Fokina.
I mean, that's a good time, isn't it? I might have to pop my head in there for about 4 hours.
I think we'll be popping our heads in there. Interestingly, in the French portion of the Artifice press conference, he was asked about the turnaround from Lyon to coming here, and also the fact that this is his first Grand Slam.
Never
played five sets before. And, you know, even for players with a lot more experience than him, it can be very, very tricky to win the week before a slam and carry that through into said slam. And he said, look, physically he's fine, not daunted by five sets at all. He said he's always trained to play five sets, but he did acknowledge that emotionally best of five sets is different. He said, c'est plus compliqué. And he said, I don't know exactly how until I'm in the moment, but he realised that the emotional rhythms of the match are something you can't prepare for in the same way you can for the physical side of things, which again, like, incredibly incisive stuff for an 18-year-old. I found his poise astonishing, really. On just a couple more I wanted to pick out from tomorrow. Court 14, you'll find the former champion Stan Wawrinka against Albert Ramos Vinolas. And court 6 tomorrow is where you'll find multiple finalist Dominic Thiem.
Wow.
I mean, he didn't get a wild card, Dominic Thiem, and now he's been shoved on court 6.
I find that quite sad. I really do. I don't know the circumstances by which he didn't get a wild card. And, you know, I know that they're typically given to French players mostly and a lot of young players. But I think Dominic Thiem is somebody who warrants looking after.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't have to qualify. He eventually got in by virtue of withdrawals, didn't he? But it was touch and go for a while.
It was Rafael Nadal's withdrawal that got Thiem in.
Oh, that's sad and poetic.
Yeah, don't feel you have to respond, you know, react to that in the moment. I feel like that takes some processing, doesn't it?
Mm. We are on a podcast, though, so I do have to react to it in the moment. Thanks, Matt. Why don't we move on to talk about our mascots?
Oh, why don't we?
And our performances on day one of the French Open.
Okay.
We all got points, David.
Well, I'm at a roll, I am. 2-2.
Yeah, you are a bit. I have got Xenia as my mascot, and Luca Puy scored us points today.
Oh,
David, nice you and Maisie story. Scored points with...
Yeah, Maisie, you and I and Camilla Georgie did something about it as well. I've just notched up another 15 points to add to our 210-point haul from the other day.
And Matt and Darwin?
Yep, we scored points thanks to Maya Sharif.
There was a point in the day when Matt was having an absolute crisis about the fact that Magdalena Freck was winning easily because he was like, oh, so nearly went for Freck.
Mm. If Freck had won for the loss of, what, one or two games and then Sharif had lost, I would have kicked myself, but we're fine.
We have our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah and Drew.
Hey.
We have Phoebe, our lovely, lovely mascot. We received a photo of Phoebe, didn't we, reacting to the news that she's our first three-peat mascot.
Aww.
And Phoebe was delighted about it. We have Billie Jean, who's been frolicking around in the London sunshine. She went out in Soho last night, did Billie Jean.
How lovely.
Mm. She is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. And Matt, we have shout-outs.
We do. First of this year's French Open for Ian Farrand in Winchester.
All right, Ian.
Hello, Ian.
Ian says, I love all things tennis podcasts, but for me, the perfect pod episode would include Catherine ranting about faff, David being pumped, and Matt telling me something about a player I know little about.
Literally every episode, Ian.
Go on, Ian.
Plus, ideally, a mention of Haddad Meyer in David's direction.
All right, Ian.
I almost picked her to lose tomorrow. I can't remember who she plays, but I thought,
I no longer have her in my consciousness.
Thank you very much, Ian.
Cheers, Ian.
Haddad Meyer plays Tatiana Maria tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, she's going to beat Tatiana Maria.
Maybe. We'll see.
We've also got Caro Zotta from Salzburg.
All right, Caro.
Hello, Caro.
Caro says, Spotify's yearly rap informed me that in 2022, I listened to 20,643 minutes of the pod, which is a little over 2 full weeks.
Caro, you're a legend.
There was a moment there where I thought you were going to say hours, and I was really concerned for Caro.
And us, maybe a little bit.
That's really awesome,
yeah.
Caro. Thank you. That's incredibly lovely.
I'm touched.
I can't think of any tennis Caros or tennis Ians, so I hope our third shout-out is for a tennis-y name.
Well, it's for Josephine Maybom. And you may remember very recently we had Karen Maybom.
Yes!
And Karen is Josephine's mother. Oh, isn't that lovely? Josephine is in Lausanne in Switzerland.
Mother-daughter shout-out.
Mm. That's great. And I'm still struggling with a tennis-related Josephine, I'm afraid. I'm so sorry, but if anybody think of one...
Josephine in my flying machine.
Who needs a tennis player when you can get a Catherine song out of it?
That was fabulous.
Look, we were desperate.
Thanks, Josephine.
Thank you ever so much, Josephine. Thanks to all of our friends of the Tennis Podcast. It's thanks to you that we are here talking about tennis, and that Matt and I are going to, you know, get to go and watch Carlos Alcaraz on Long Lane tomorrow and call it work.
Being made to.
Being made to. That's what's coming up tomorrow. We'll, of course, do a tennis podcast at the end of it all. We hope you'll be listening. We'll speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.